That is quite true, went on Acharya, for you see, you are looking, not at an astral watch, but at the watch that you have imagined on your wrist. You are used to wearing a watch, so you automatically raise your wrist every time you want to know the hour. The mere fact that you expect to find a watch on your wrist, makes a watch appear on your wrist, for this is the world of illusion and what you think at the moment is for the moment. Now wait here and I will go and ascertain the exact time so far as we are concerned, for we are only interested in the time that exists in the place where your body is lying and to know when you are likely to have to return to that body. The time that rules in other parts of the world is of no interest to you in this case. As he finished speaking, he seemed to vanish into thin air. I had hardly recovered from my surprise, when he was back again, standing beside me. He continued. I return to your body, sleeping in your bedroom in Colombo, and the watch on your wrist there says 11:30. But surely my watch must have stopped, I said, for we seem to have been on the astral plane for hours and not just for an hour and a half. Acharya continued, you will soon realize that time seems different at the astral level from what you are used to at the physical level. It is quite true that only 1.5 hours have elapsed since you emerged from your physical body and we started our tour, and you will appreciate even more what I say when, tomorrow, you write down your experiences and realize what you accomplished in just 1.5 hours of physical plane time. You must have had experience in your physical life when you awakened at 6 o'clock in the morning and realized that you had not to get up for at least another hour. You turned over, went to sleep again and had a long complicated dream that time seemed to take a whole day. Then you awoke and your clock told you that you had only been asleep for 20 minutes. What I have told you is an astral fact, which you must remember, for time does not exist at this level. We then left Daphne's workroom and were again in the passage. We floated down the stairs into the main hall and into the garden. No one seemed to be about, though we passed one man who was going into the academy to carry on with his studies, for he had a case under his arm that looked as if it contained a flute. He smiled as he passed, but did not speak. Acharya said that he wanted to take us to hear a special symphony concert, which the Deva Kingdom was giving in the deep forest, in a remote part of the astral world where humans seldom penetrate. He told us that he had obtained permission for me and or him to attend and that he had no doubt that there would be no objection to Daphne coming along also, particularly as she was devoting a great part of her astral existence to the study of music. He explained that this concert would be quite different from any we had heard before, because its object was to produce beautiful music, but its specific purpose was building up a vortex of power that could be utilized for influencing a particularly important conference, which was taking place in the physical world at the moment. He did not say what the conference was, but intimated that it had to do with the war, and that the decisions which were made at this conference would have a great bearing on the eventual result of the war. Also the date when once again the world would have stopped fighting and would have decided to try and settle its differences by negotiation instead of through the medium of arms and munitions. He explained that such force could be built up into waves, through deep concentration and through sound. This blending of chords, brought about by means of each individual taking part in the proceedings concentrating deeply on the purpose to be achieved, built up a vortex of power which, when transmitted to the venue of the meeting through the medium of thought, actually influenced the people taking part in the conference. He gave as an example a group of people who were all irritable, some angry and all more or less worked up. Before opening such a meeting, the chairman arranged for everyone to be served with a drink and to be allowed to smoke. At the same time, he made sure that each had a comfortable chair, with the room warmed if it were cold, to a temperature at which people felt relaxed. The meeting opened, the chairman perhaps started the proceedings by telling a good story, a second round of drinks was served and then the serious details of the agenda were tackled. What was the result? The people there, who a short time previously were feeling irritable and ready to disagree with each other, developed a camaraderie that made sensible discussion possible and the work of the chairman easy. In just the same way but to a much greater degree, the force generated by such an effort as the Deva Kingdom was to make that night could be used to affect a group of men whose great influence could sway the destinies of countless millions of human beings. What they decided would indeed influence future humanity, so the work was certainly worthwhile. Without further preamble, we then set off into the distance, floating about 5 yards above the ground and traveling at a speed of about 50 miles an hour. This part of the astral world did not seem to be occupied by human beings. I cannot remember passing any individuals or groups of people, as we sped upon our way. I noticed that the country was exceedingly beautiful and that from time to time we passed buildings, either near or in the distance, that appeared to be similar to the academy, which we had left a short time previously. There was a profusion of flowers everywhere and numerous trees studded the countryside. Here and there I saw dense wooded patches of country, but we were traveling too quickly to notice anything significant about them. I think Acharya did most of the talking and as far as I remembered he described the country through which we were passing, but my mind was so full with the wonders of my journey and what was still in store for me, that I cannot remember anything particular to record. After traveling for what seemed like 10 to 15 minutes, I saw ahead of us what appeared to be a dense forest and I remember Acharya pointing out this landmark when we approached it, as the end of our journey. We did not, however, come to earth at the beginning of the forest, but floated some few feet above the tops of the trees for perhaps 3 or 4 miles, then, our progress having slowed down to something approaching a walking pace, Acharya led us through an opening in the trees, where I observed there was a most beautiful open glade in the form of a rough circle the diameter of which was possibly 50 yards. As we came to earth, there was no sign of activity, nor could I see anyone or anything moving in the open space before us. We were led to a huge tree, the roots of which gave us most comfortable seats, and were told to sit down and remain quiet. It is perhaps opportune that I mention my impression of the light in this open space or glade. We were surrounded by dense trees, like an Indian jungle, whose tops seemed to branch out, so that the space at the top was very much smaller than the circle on the edge of which we sat. As I have mentioned, on the astral plane the light is bluish-gray, much clearer than the most perfect moonlight, but it has not the bright, direct effect that sunlight gives. Visualize this glade as being perfectly light in its entirety. If a rabbit had run across the open circle, no one could have missed seeing it, until it had run into the thickness of the jungle. We therefore had perfect vision of everything that took place, and at the same time were surrounded by dense forest into which little or no light penetrated. After sitting there for some minutes, I noticed a group of little men, like dwarfs, emerge from the forest on my extreme left, where they seated themselves cross-legged in a semicircle. As far as I can remember, there were about 10 of them and each one carried with him an instrument, which looked like a cross between a kettledrum and a tom-tom. I noticed they were dressed in little brown suits, with tiny shoes and caps made of a vivid green material, far brighter than the foliage of the trees. Their features appeared to be those of middle-aged men, varying from 40 to 70 years of age, judging by Earth standards. Those of you who have seen Walt Disney's film of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs will have quite a good idea of the appearance of these little men. They did not speak or make any sound. Soon afterwards, a group of much taller people emerged from the forest, both male and female, an entirely different race. They appeared to be nearer to the human type, but were definitely ethereal in appearance. The female members of this group were girls whose ages might have been from 18 to 25. All had long hair either hanging free or tied with a blue or green ribbon. Both men and women were absolutely silent. This group numbered perhaps 35 in all and they carried with them instruments, obviously of a musical character, but slightly different from the violins, cellos, clarinets and flutes, which we see in a Western world orchestra. They did not sit down, but ranged themselves so that those with the same type of instrument were more or less together, whilst all formed a compact group, standing perhaps about 20 yards away from the first group of little men. There did not seem to be a breath of wind, yet the top branches of the huge trees moved very slightly. An amazing silence prevailed for perhaps 2 minutes, then all at once the little men started to use their drums. Almost simultaneously they began to chant in very low voices, which blended with the background of the drums, without taking away from the beauty of the notes, which come from the mouths of the little men. Obviously it was a spiritual chant or mantra, for the very air was permeated with the outpouring of force, which quite definitely they were endeavoring to create. After perhaps 6 verses of this chant, the second group, or main orchestra, commenced to play. It is quite impossible to describe the beauty of the music played, which blended perfectly with the background of chanting and gentle drumming. The volume was not great, but it held one enthralled by its purity and beauty. What was being played was a symphony, for it had separate and distinct movements, with a main theme, which was repeated from time to time. 2 complete movements had been played and the orchestra was in the middle of the third movement when, suddenly, what seemed to be a human voice of astounding beauty rang out on the air. It seemed to come from above and immediately I looked upwards. At first I could see nothing and no one. After some time Acharya directed my attention to a distant tree on the opposite side of the glade and there at the very top I saw what appeared to be a young girl of great beauty sitting on the branches with her hair floating behind her, taking the solo part in the most beautiful symphony of sound. She was a pure soprano, her voice had no great volume but the purity of each note sung tore my heartstrings so that I wanted to weep. This went on for perhaps 10 minutes. The orchestra playing a few bars, then the girl coming in with an unaccompanied solo, later passing to the ordinary method of singing in company with the orchestra, gradually building up the power for which the music was being played. A 4th movement which seemed to embody the spirit of the 3 which had preceded it, and entirely orchestral, closed the performance. The symphony simply faded away and suddenly one realized that the silence, which had been so noticeable, surrounded us once again. I looked at the top of the tree where the singer had been, she was no longer there, the groups comprising the orchestra and the little men remained where they were, the members of the orchestra now seated on the ground. Out of the forest an old man appeared, he had a flowing beard and was dressed in ceremonial robes. He walked slowly and sedately to the center of the open glade and raising his hands in supplication to some form of deity started what seemed to be an invocation, for the 2 groups of players bowed their heads and listened to the words he uttered. I did not understand a word of what he said, yet I knew that it was a prayer, asking that the work which had just been completed should be successful. It was also an effort of will, for every member of both groups was concentrating to his or her utmost that the purpose might be fulfilled. It all ended quite suddenly and, silently, the old man vanished into the jungle, then the groups of players rose from their sitting position and moving down the glade disappeared from our vision. I was so affected by what I had heard that I did not want to move and it came as rather a shock to me when Acharya said, "Well, that is all for tonight. I shall be most interested to know how much detail you remember in the morning." I was still rather in a daze when we stood up and, floating through the opening in the trees, began our homeward journey. Acharya gave us some idea of the purport of the ceremony we had just witnessed, but I am not very clear as to what he said for my mind was still in a whirl and I was thinking about the wonderful spiritual influence which have seemed to be the outstanding part of the concert from beginning to end. I remember though that he described the different performers, he said that the little men were nature spirits, whereas the orchestra was composed of members of the Deva kingdom, which is a parallel evolution to a human kingdom, the latter were similar in development in their scheme of evolution to Daphne and myself in the human kingdom. The soloist was in a different category for she was a very advanced Deva and equal in that evolution to an exceedingly advanced individual in our evolution. The old man could be described as a priest, for he was dedicated to the priestly functions of that evolution and evolved through them, in a way very similar to that which happens in the human kingdom. In due time we came to the academy and stopped on the lawn just in front of the entrance because Acharya said it was necessary for me to retain a clear picture of this building in my mind for future occasions. I asked Daphne how I could find her again, presuming that I was able to get as far as this building by my own efforts. Acharya replied for her that I could usually be sure of finding Daphne in the same room that she had occupied when I first met her for. As there is no overcrowding in the astral world, most people can retain a particular working place for themselves. He, however, suggested to Daphne that she should show me the little cottage where she lived. Daphne was delighted at the suggestion, and asked us to come and see it. She led the way by floating over the top of the academy, when to my surprise I saw what looked like a miniature garden city nestling in a valley about half a mile in the rear of the huge building. The houses, though small, were spread out, so that each little cottage had at least an acre of ground. It was quite apparent that each occupant had designed not only his cottage but his garden, in accordance with his own particular type of temperament and taste, and the result was exceedingly beautiful. There were cottages which might have been transplanted from any of the beautiful rural districts of England, others reminiscent of small villas in the south of France. Others purely Italian in type, whilst I noticed at least two built to resemble Eastern temples. Acharya noticed that I was interested in the different architectural types, so pointed out two cottages with domes similar to many Mohammedan temples I had seen. He said they were owned by people who were particularly interested in having a room with perfect acoustic properties. Although I could have gone on gazing at this most wonderful sight, I sensed that Daphne was anxious to show us her home, so, with her leading the way, we walked along a rustic path for perhaps 200 yards. She led us through a gate into a garden, which was a veritable blaze of color. The cottage itself could only be described as a dream house. The design appealed to me immediately. In front of the porch there was a little lawn, in the middle of which grew a shade tree with several wicker chairs arranged under its spreading branches. They looked so comfortable and attractive with their bright cretonne cushions. Immediately I was struck by the advantage in the astral world, in that as there was no danger of rain or robbers, such things can be left outside for an indefinite period. We went into the cottage and Daphne showed us first of all the largest of the four rooms that the cottage contained. It was furnished as a lounge with upholstered settees and easy chairs, occasional tables, other small chairs and a baby grand piano in the corner. There was no sign of ostentation, but it was obvious that personal ideas of the owner had been given full rein, which in the world is often impossible, owing to the cost of things that we would dearly like to have. Here there was no such limitation, and it was obvious from looking at this room that the owner was a person of artistic tastes, but with no desire for show in any form. There were several large windows, stretching almost the full length of the lounge, and the clear astral light which came through them brought out the beautiful blending of the colors in the tapestry that covered the chairs and settees and the colors of the Persian carpet that blended so harmoniously with the tapestry, upholstery and curtains. I realized that perfection was very easy to obtain at this level, if one had the right ideas. In the world one might search for years and then not find a Persian carpet that blended so perfectly with the other colors used in the decoration of the room. The walls, which were an ivory color, were bare but for a couple of etchings and one or two delightful watercolors. It was a room in which one wanted to sit. It looked like a home and not a room for show. From just walking through the rooms, you realized the type of occupant who lived there, and I could well understand Daphne wanting to show us her home. The second largest room was furnished as a bedroom, a very typical woman's bedroom, with a divan in one corner and all the other details of furniture which one usually finds in a perfectly furnished room of this type. I was surprised that a bedroom should be necessary in the astral world, where sleep is not part of the ordinary routine of life. Daphne explained that, however, by asking me whether there were not occasions when I felt a desire to see relax in a reclining position, merely to think or to read. I had to admit this was so, and Daphne told me that she spent very many happy hours relaxing on her divan, thinking, reading and making plans for the future. The remaining two rooms turned out to be a library and a kitchen. The library was furnished with the same comfort and artistic taste as the other two rooms, bookcases filled with books all bound in beautiful Russian leather completely covered two sides of the room. The mere look of the volumes invited one to sit down and peruse their contents. The kitchen was furnished with all modern appliances, and although I had imagined a kitchen would be unnecessary here, Daphne said she still enjoyed making snacks for parties. Acheya again remarked that habits die very slowly in human beings, and usually many years of existence in the astral world passed before these habits were entirely eradicated and forgotten. I should have liked to remain here for a much longer time, but I could see Acheya was beginning to feel that the time was ripe for us to be on our way. I made one last request, and that was to spend a few minutes in the garden. It was very delightful wandering among the flowerbeds, testing the scent of particular flowers and finding in each eye case that it was exactly the same as those flowers in the world, but perhaps a little more pronounced. Acheya commented on this point by saying that I should only be able to recognize a particular scent if I knew what to expect. For example, if there were a flower which I had never seen before and whose scent was unfamiliar to me, I would only smell what I imagined the scent to be, judging entirely from its appearance, whereas the real scent might be quite different from my imagination. Daphne saw us to the gate, where we wished her au revoir. I assured her that I would most certainly return to visit her, if I were able to find my way. We floated into the air again over the top of the Academy building, coming to earth once more at the foot of the rise on which the I building stood. Acheya again told me to impress the outline of the building on my inclination so that I could make a perfect thought form of it at any time that I was trying to reach it. This I did. Acheya then told me that it was time to return to my physical body in Colombo, and that the machinery necessary to effect this transfer was the same as we used when reaching the sphere of the astral world. He told me not to worry about it, but simply to make an effort of will and endeavored to make a thought form of the lawn outside my bungalow in Colombo. He held my hand as he had done previously, but he told me that this was merely to give me confidence and was quite unnecessary. I started to concentrate with all my might, and as I did so, I noticed that my surroundings immediately became blurred, and although there was no actual wind resistance noticeable, I had the feeling that I was moving through space. Instinctively I closed my eyes, holding the thought form of my garden in mind, and after perhaps a few seconds, the feeling of movement seemed to cease. On opening my eyes, I saw Acheya standing beside me on my own lawn outside my bungalow in Colombo, smiling at my obvious surprise. We immediately entered the bungalow through the locked front door, went up the stairs and through the door of my bedroom. It no longer amazed me that neither of these doors offered any resistance. Sure enough, my body, which I had left so many hours previously, was still lying asleep on the bed, but it seemed to show some slight signs of restlessness, which Acheya explained was the normal reaction of a body when the time approached for awakening. He said I would awake in a very short time and emphasized the necessity for me to sit down and record immediately the details of the happenings of the night that had passed. He placed his hand just above the top of the head on my body and appeared to concentrate upon the brain cells, so that they should give me the necessary assistance in remembering. I do not remember saying goodbye to Acheya, not have I any recollection of his leaving the room, for within a few seconds I felt the urge to return to my body very strongly within me and, with the slithering movement which I had noticed on a previous occasion, I slipped into it again and at once was wide awake. Thank heaven, the memory of the night's happening was still with me, so I immediately got out of bed, put on a dressing gown and moved over to my desk to commence the record of my journey. It was 5:45, and I found it necessary to switch on the electric light, as it was not light enough here for me either to write or use my typewriter. The report has taken a considerable time to complete, but as I had carefully arranged beforehand that I was not to be interrupted, I was able to finish it in peace and without any outside distractions. Having breakfasted, I read through my report to make sure I had not forgotten anything. Tonight I mean to make an attempt on my own to get back to the third sphere using the academy where Daphne works for my landmark. I am really excited this time, for I have something to report. Not that I accomplished anything very wonderful, but at least I had some success. After returning from a walk, I felt physically tired and gradually prepared for bed. I read for a few minutes after getting into bed, then turned out the light and settled myself for sleep. I still remember so clearly what my body looks like lying on the backslash bed that it was no longer necessary for me to visualize myself in a hypothetical mirror, as I had been taught to do in the early days. I don't remember slipping out of my body, but sure enough, there I was in my room, with my body lying on the bed, as I had seen it on previous occasions. I went out of my room through the door, down the stairs and out of the front door onto the lawn where Acharya and I had stood not so many hours previously. It could only have been about 10:30, for there were still people about, walking and driving along the road. I realized that what I was seeing was the astral counterpart of the cars and of those people, and that I was actually on the lowest or first sphere of the astral world. Now to make my attempt to get away from that first sphere, up to the third sphere where Daphne is living. Now to concentrate the whole of my effort of will and make a thought form of the academy, which Acharya made me visualize so carefully early this morning. I closed my eyes and used every ounce of willpower that I possess and, sure enough, the feeling of movement without any wind resistance was the same. I kept the thought form of the academy very clearly in my mind, willing myself to reach the spot, and all at once I seemed to feel the sensation of movement had ceased and I opened my eyes. Thank heaven, I'd done it. There stood the academy on the top of the hill, just as I had seen it last night. My excitement was almost too great to bear. In fact, I must have lost control of my faculties entirely, for suddenly everything around me, including the academy, became blurred, and the next thing that I remember was waking up in bed in my physical body in Colombo, with my heart beating 13 to the dozen. Oh God! I've messed it up entirely. I got there. I actually reached the place where I wanted to be, and through my excitement and lack of control I'm back again where I started, wide awake. I must have lain awake for at least 2 hours, cursing my stupidity and lack of control, then I seemed to settle down again and become sleepy. I decided to have another try, and this time to keep control of my faculties so that I would not return to my physical body before it had had its normal quota of sleep. Once again I concentrated on getting out of my body, at the same time I kept before me the thought form of the academy building. This time my exit from my body was a little different from the first occasion. I have no recollection whatsoever of standing in my bedroom, as I did earlier in the night, but to my amazement and great joy I found myself on the same spot from which I was so ruthlessly dragged when I lost control, a few hours before. This time I remembered that control was necessary and somehow forced myself to remain calm. I know that I sat down on the grass making no effort at all to go near the academy, but just concentrated deeply on steadying my heartbeats and remaining cool and collected. Then I rose to my feet and floated up to the main entrance of the building, up the stairs and to the door of the room which I remembered so clearly had been occupied by Daphne the previous night. This time I realized that there was no possibility of going through the door in the same way that one does on the physical plan, for this building was composed of astral matter and therefore a door here was an obstacle to one's progress, as I also was in astral matter. I knocked on the door and waited, but there was no response. Once again I knocked, wondering whether the noise I made was insufficient for the occupant to hear. But again complete silence reigned and the door did not open. After a little time I carefully turned the handle and shyly peeped in. I need not have worried, for there was no one there. I recognized the room though as the one where I had met Daphne the previous night, so without further preamble, I closed the door again, floated down the stairs and out of the front door. Rising in the air I passed over the rooftop and proceeded on my way, in the hope that Daphne would be at her cottage. I came to Earth before I reached the Garden City and had another look at its beautiful setting. It was indeed rather like a glimpse of paradise. No wonder that I had wanted to remain looking at it for a longer period last night.